He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Happy Thursday. It's Thursday, June 20th. It's almost July. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vix. How we doing?
We're doing finer than frogs here, buddy. How's that for an old dip into the bag and pull out a phrase from 1943?
I've never heard that one before. Please never use it again.
I promise I won't.
Nope, never.
Nope, that one's buried.
That one is...
no encore.
That's a flag. So Jacob Markstrom is officially a member of the New Jersey Devils. Obviously, Wednesday's show was dedicated to the Jacob Markstrom trade, and plenty of action on the Flames Talk podcast on Wednesday. When you make a trade like that, if you're the Flames, it's going to get some eyeballs and some ears on a lot of what's being put out. So it felt like for the longest time, Jacob was going to end up in New Jersey. It felt like for the longest time, Markstrom and the Devils was going to get done. It was just a matter of when, matter of how, and a matter of, in my mind anyway, a matter of what the Flames are going to be able to extract from New Jersey. And it felt like, if we go back to last week and the latter stages of last week, it felt like this was going to continue to be a slog for the Flames to get this done. And I it felt like it was going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like sometime prior to the end of the draft that the Flames and Devils would come together on something. But one of the things we've been telling you over the last few weeks is that the Markstrom camp, to make this happen in a more expedited fashion, was going to have to maybe open things up a little more to get it done. Even if New Jersey was the top preference. And there's no question in my mind and from my understanding that the Markstrom camp going all the way back to February was laser focused on New Jersey. And New Jersey was the number one place that he wanted to go. And for the longest time was kind of the only place he and his camp were locked in on and wanted to land in. And because there was such a very thin group of teams and one team for the longest time, it was a grind. And if you're the Flames, you have to hold your cards close to the vest. You have to be willing to be patient because New Jersey knows they've got leverage. They know that they know as well as anybody. This is a very, very small world. They know as well as anybody that Jacob is very focused on going to New Jersey. And I think one of the big things, I think there's a few things that help get this thing over the finish line. And one of them is I do think that in the 48 hours or so prior to the deal being made, that did change a little bit. And there was a little bit more of a willingness for the Markstrom camp to maybe open it up. And I think as much as anything, because I think they realize that it might help get him to his number one destination, which is New Jersey. So I think that's what got New Jersey to a better place in this thing, because I do not believe the Devils were offering anywhere close to what they were offering prior to the deal getting done. Like sometime on Wednesday morning, Tuesday night, whatever the case may be, I think that New Jersey's offer took a step forward, and that's what got them to get it done. So when that changes and the Devils finally include a first-round pick, when they realized that maybe they weren't the only team that could be involved, I think that got New Jersey to a better place. That got New Jersey to a spot of, okay, what are the chances that he goes to an Ottawa or a Los Angeles? Obviously, wouldn't have been LA after they got Kemper, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
What are the chances he goes to Los Angeles? What are the chances he goes to Ottawa? What are the chances he goes to Toronto? Even if you're like, yeah, it's a small chance, you have to realize that all of a sudden, now there's a little bit more exposure that you might not get your number one target if you're New Jersey. I think that got them to up their offer. And as soon as a first round pick was on the table, I think, boom, the Flames decided to make that deal. And I think the Devils were the team that still wanted him the most, as much as Ottawa or Toronto or Los Angeles or Team Y and Team Z might have wanted him. I think the Devils had the best offer on the table, and I think there was also New Jersey's final offer. And that's the other thing that I think got this to the finish line, is that the Devils took a step up in terms of what they were offering, and they also were like, okay, this is our final offer, or else we're going to pivot. I've heard that now from a few different places, that New Jersey was kind of like, okay, we'll step up, but this is the last thing that we're going to put on the table. Flames got what they were looking for in a first-round pick. And they were in a situation where they knew that New Jersey was still the number one place Jacob wanted to go. And they probably believed that New Jersey was going to be the team that was willing to pay the most, because New Jersey wanted him the most. And that's why when the deal was made on Wednesday morning, I was really surprised they got a first round pick, because I did not think they were going to get it. Anything that I had heard was like, yeah, first round pick, that's right now not there. And so I was pretty surprised on Wednesday morning when they got that 2025 first round pick. And I think it took opening up even slightly the possibilities, and that got this deal done, got New Jersey to a slightly different place, a better place. It's why we've said all along, open it up and this thing gets done. Funny enough, took like 24, 48 hours or so, somewhere in that range, to open it up, and bam, there's a deal being done on Wednesday morning, right?
It felt like the first round pick was somewhat of a prerequisite for the Calgary Flames in order to find the quote unquote desire to move your number one in Jacob Markstrom. And yes, they needed to open up space in the crease for Dustin Wolf, and Jacob Markstrom made it perfectly clear he wanted to play on a team that was going to be competitive. But to your point, yeah, I'm of the understanding that the New Jersey Devils were moving towards a situation where if this doesn't get done in the next X number of hours or X number of days, then it wasn't going to get done with the Calgary Flames. They were going to pivot. They were going to look at other options on that goalie market. And I think that helped create the situation where, okay, they can help facilitate what the Flames are looking for. And the Flames are more interested in consummating a deal in advance of the draft. Like, I remember when we were talking a couple of days ago, when do you see a Jacob Markstrom deal getting done? Well, we both kind of agreed. We saw it happening either at or just before next Friday, the opening round of the 2024 NHL draft. I don't think either of us were necessarily expecting it to happen this week. Lo and behold, it does. Jacob Markstrom has a new destination, and the Calgary Flames have another first round pick to play with next season, as well as a young defenseman in Kevin Ball coming back.
And I think that as soon as, if you're the Flames, and look, there is also, and this has been mentioned a few times, there's no question that the bonus would have played into it too. I think Jacob was due a $2.5 million signing bonus on July 1, so now the Flames not on the hook for that. They got that done before the bonus kicks in. That'll be New Jersey paying that for the coming season. And I think if you're the Flames, you knew that you were in the window. You knew that you were in the pocket, that it made the most sense to get a deal done. New Jersey finally steps up after, and full credit to Tom Fitzgerald. That's what you do when you know you've got the leverage. You
absolutely
use it. And that's why Craig Conroy had to be patient as the Flames general manager, because he also knew that New Jersey had a little bit more leverage than you would like in making a trade. So when finally that leverage, and I don't know if it was the Flames pleading with the Markstrom camp, or if it was the Markstrom camp who just understood that this might help something get done in an expedited fashion. But as soon as it got opened up, all of a sudden it made it that much easier for a deal to get done. And so I think this is the best deal that was on the table. I don't think the Flames, if they decided to wait and like play chicken with the Markstrom camp, I don't think they were going to get a better deal in like mid-July,
right,
or August or something like that. And I know they're like, what's the rush? Well, there were a few things. First of all, I know there's no 2024 pick in this, but it sounds like from a number of people I've spoken to, 2024 picks were never on the table in this conversation for Jacob. I don't know. You've got the bonus coming up. You've got teams needing to set their rosters. And if you're the Devils, and Boston's like, well, you know, we want to trade Linus Allmark sometime in this pocket, and you're the Devils, you're like, okay, well, Allmark, we got to give a contract extension to, probably going to cost a little bit more because he doesn't have the full no move clause and he's younger and he's the reigning Vezina Trophy winner for a few more days here. So it just, I think if you're New Jersey and Markstrom was always your number one choice, you wanted to get this done. The Flames knew that the Devils wanted to get this done. You finally got that first round pick, and there you go. A deal gets done. It's why on Wednesday I was pretty impressed with what the Flames got back. I know there are people giving it B minus or D minus or whatever grades come out for trades. We always know it's somewhat silly to be making trade grades the day the trade is made. But when you factor in all the circumstances, the timing, all of the information and misinformation that was out there, so on and so forth, I call me a homer or whatever, glasses on, whatever the case may be, I thought the Flames were getting far less for Markstrom than what they got. The fact that they got a first-round pick and a serviceable player who's 23 and can come in and play on their blue line next year, I still believe they did pretty solid on that trade. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's necessarily doing backflips over the return. And myself, I don't think that it's a home run, but it's certainly not a swing and a miss. And it checks a lot of boxes for the Calgary Flames in terms of what they're trying to do. They're trying to get younger. They're trying to accumulate draft picks. Markstrom was a 34-year-old goaltender who clearly wanted to find a new destination. It opens up a door for Dustin Wolf. That's a priority. You mentioned the Flames get a 23-year-old defenseman who, as it stands today, could be penciled into a top four spot for the Calgary Flames. Is he necessarily a top four defenseman? The future will bear that out. Keep in mind, he's only played one full NHL season. But when you look at how deep, or the lack of depth, I guess you could say, currently on the NHL roster for the Calgary Flames, Kevin Ball's going to play. He played 17 and a half minutes in New Jersey. Wouldn't shock me to see him play a little bit more. So when you factor in everything that...
As of right now, he's a top four defenseman on this team. He'd
be number three right now, really, on the depth chart. I would put him ahead of Miramanov.
He'd be your number... With who is signed right now...
Yes,
he'd
today.
Be your number one left shot defenseman.
Correct.
Now, we'll see what happens with Shillington, and I still think there's a good chance that something gets done on the Shillington front, especially now with draft week around the corner. I think some gaps get bridged, or there's a good chance that some gaps get bridged at the draft or during draft week. But who's on the roster right now? Kevin Ball is your top left shot defenseman.
So everything you're trying to do from an organizational standpoint for the Calgary Flames, get younger, accumulate picks, to be perfectly honest, move out players that don't necessarily want to be here. And that's not so much to say Jacob Markstrom didn't want to be in Calgary. He just wanted to play for a contender. Again, he's 34. He'll turn 35 midway through next season. The clock is ticking in terms of his competitive years remaining. So I can certainly understand it from the player's standpoint. Also factor in, as you mentioned, he has a no-move clause, so that complicates things a little bit as well. Like, to me, fans clamoring about, well, where's the number 10 pick from New Jersey? The value's not there for New Jersey. It was never a part of the conversation. So I wouldn't use that, if you're listening, as, well, why didn't they get the number 10 as a barometer for what the return is when you consider all these other elements?
I don't know if this text is a joke or not. I think it's sarcastic.
I hope so.
I really hope it's sarcastic. 960, 960, by the way. Text line open for you if you're listening live on this Thursday afternoon. This says, if I was Conroy, I would have simply taken the Corposalo contract back along with Tim Stützle for Jacob Markstrom. And I really hope that that is a non-delusional text and is just
I took it
being
literal.
Funny and sarcastic.
So if you can read the context there,
I just
you're
know,
better than me.
I just know that we have got a group of listeners who are very well-versed in the art of snark in a good way, like in funny snark. And if that is funny snark, then I salute you because
that's
quite
of the cap.
Funny. If it's not, no offense, but what are you talking about? Yes, you know what? That offer was on the table. The Senators were offering one of the best young centers in the game. And all you had to do was take back the Corposalo contract. Yeah, you know what? The Flames, who need centers more than anything else, like, nah, Stützle, no, we're not going to do it. Like, come on. And again, my guess is 9237. My guess is that that is a full-on sarcastic, funny comment. I really hope that's the case.
Then a tip of the cap, because as you mentioned, a 22-year-old number one point-per-game center to just absorb Corposalo. That is all day, every day.
Is Tim Stützle going to be a 100-point player in this league?
I think he'll knock on... This is the debate. Is he a 100-point player? Does he reach 100 points? I think he reaches 100 points in a season.
He's 22.
I don't know if he's a perennial 100-point guy.
He went from 90 and 78 to 70 and 75 year over year. I don't know. I think that he's a 95 to 100-point guy a few times in his career. The other thing that's... And it's funny you brought up Ullmark. It'll be interesting to see what Linus Ullmark ends up getting on the market, but I think he's 4 years younger than Jacob. He does not have a full no move clause like Markstrom did. He's got a 16 team no trade clause or no trade list. That's what Linus Ullmark has. So it is a far more wide open situation for Boston than it was for Calgary. He just won a Vezina trophy, all those types of things. You know, on the one hand, doesn't have the proven track record of starting a lot of games like Jacob does. But I think there are less health concerns going forward on the Ullmark front. So it'll be curious to see. But I asked Craig Conroy on Wednesday's show when he joined us about the difficulties of working with a full no move clause. I thought Conroy answered it really, really well. It's difficult, but it's part of the business. I just want to play you this clip for a second.
Jacob deserved the right. He got that when he signed the contract with us. So, you know, he has final say on everything. He can say no. He can say no to anything, you know, so it's not like I think when we did the Lindholm trade, I just did the trade and I called Lindy and his agent to let him know that it was done and, you know, what kind of the deal was. And that was it. Like, but with these things, it's not easy. It's not as easy as people think. I know they think it's, you know, well, he'll go anywhere. Well, no, that's his right. You know, he can make that decision. I saw it when Jerome was here. So it's not as easy as people think, and you have to be considerate. And obviously, you know, when some of our players' names have been out in the media, that's hard also. I mean, that's not a great feeling for me or the player.
I just wonder what working with the full no move clause does for Conroy when he signs some contracts going forward. I wonder how hesitant and sparsely he'll give out those no moves going forward.
Well, I mean, he's certainly well-versed in trying to work around partial or full no trades or no moves. So
Hanifin basically went like that. The Hanifin camp went about their business. Again, this is not a criticism. Full power to you, but went about their business like they had a no move clause and made life difficult on the Flames and trying to make that deal as well. So maybe it doesn't matter.
I don't know. I still think that it matters if you have term remaining. Let's say that, because Noah Hanifin, of course, was a pending unrestricted free agent who a month or a month and a half or 2 months later ended up re-upping with Vegas. But if I'm putting myself in the big chair, knowing what I've had to deal with over the course of the last 365 days with pending unrestricted free agents, some with trade protection, some without, as well as the Jacob Markstrom situation, I might be a little hesitant to start tossing around certain clauses in contracts that I'm hoping to sign. But at the end of the day, sometimes that's the difference between getting a deal done and missing out on a player. So it's a fine line there as well. But at the same time, yeah, I could see a little bit of, oh, do I really want to give that up? Oh, I know what I just dealt with. I could see the hesitation in wanting to toss a few of those around.
To summarize, I think when you take into account all the circumstances, I actually think the Flames, to get a first-round pick, pleasantly surprised. You don't have to agree, but I really think that they, for the tough spot they were in, did a pretty good job. Why do we think New Jersey was the clear number one choice for the Markstrom camp all along? I think I know, but what for you made it so that, like, it had been so apparent for so long that New Jersey was where Markstrom wanted to end up?
I don't have the rosters right in front of me, but I imagine one of the big things is you look at organizations and teams league-wide that are in a position to contend right now. For the most part, they have their goaltending situation already figured out. And yes, the New Jersey Devils were nowhere near the team last season that they were 2 years ago when they made the playoffs, when they had a 100-point season. But a lot of that was A, injuries, and B, lack of quality goaltending. And if you're Jacob Markstrom and you're going, where do I want to go that I can fit, that I can be a bona fide number one, that I can help this team contend? The New Jersey Devils check a lot of those boxes for a goaltender. And if you're as confident in yourself as Jacob Markstrom tends to be, you look at that roster and you go, if this is who's playing in front of me, I can certainly take them to the next level to be a, I want to say perennial playoff team, because he's only got 2 years left on his deal. But he certainly believes that the New Jersey Devils can be a playoff team in those two remaining years.
I think that there's a few things. I know that it was actually Mike Morial, who we're speaking to this hour, who talked about that, asked him about analytics. He said, I like wins. I don't care. I think Jacob and his camp are very well aware that his playing style and the way New Jersey plays go. Kevin Woodley doesn't just sit, like, goalies know too. So I think there was also a very stylistic fit.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the fact, New Jersey needed a goaltender to get to the next step. And they look like a team that should be knocking on the door to be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference going forward. And you factor in an elite number one center in Jack Hughes, they've got one of the two or three best two-way centers in the league. Like, you're talking Hughes and Heischer as your 1-2 punch down the middle. That is stupid good. And then Meyer and Jesper Bratz turned into a player. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Alexander Holtz, but there's lots to like there. They've got a great blue line.
Yeah, you factor in Dougie Hamilton and Jonas Siegenthaler. Plus, you've got arguably the two best defensive prospects in the NHL, and Luke Hughes and Simone Nemec. Like, all the pieces start coming together. And then the one thing I might just put on top is the cherry. If you're a multimillionaire, why wouldn't you want to live in New York?
And that's, like, a lot of the guys either live in the nice areas of New Jersey, or they live across the river in Manhattan, right?
Right.
I was out for lunch earlier, and I was explaining that to somebody. He's like, you know, why would you want to live in New Jersey? I'm like, well, actually, there's some really, apparently, I don't know New Jersey very well, but there's some really nice areas in New Jersey that the guys love living in. And also, you are literally across the river from Manhattan. And if you're a multimillionaire, yeah, you'd like to live in Manhattan. That's not a bad place to live. Downtown Chicago, downtown Manhattan, downtown, you know, or like Hollywood Boulevard, Sunset Strip, Los Angeles, like Miami Beach. These are places that millionaires like to be. So I think he'll have no problem with that. I do wonder about a couple of texters brought up Chris Tanev. My gut says Tanev still stays in Dallas, but
New Jersey's the new number two, right?
Jacob Markstrom doesn't have that guy's teeth on his mask for nothing. So I wonder about Tanev landing in New Jersey. Just a little bit. That'd be pretty fun. Read a few texts in a second, but I'm also really intrigued about Calgary's goaltending situation going forward. I think there are risks with going Wolf and Vladar, but I don't mind that. And I think if you go and sign another veteran kind of quad A guy who can play in the American League, I think of guys like Eric Comrie, Chris Drieger, somewhere like guys in that, they can definitely play in the NHL if need be. And they've got no problem being in the American League and are really good in the American League. You know, it kind of clogs up the system with Connor Murphy and Ignatiu, who they just signed, and some of the some of the goaltending prospects they have, it might jam it up a little bit, but I'm intrigued for Wolf and Vladar if that is indeed the way they go.
And that's one of the probably lesser storylines that'll play itself out over the course of summer and into training camp. And all signs point to Dan Vladar recovering just fine from hip surgery. He'll be back in camp, knock wood, provided there aren't any setbacks next September. But I do wonder if there's a situation or a desire or just something along the lines of the goalie department wanting to see, or at least tinkering with the idea of having somebody more veteran to pair with Dustin Wolf. And that would have been the big benefit had Jacob Markstrom been willing to stay, is you could run a Markstrom-Wolf tandem. And to me, that would have been a best case development scenario for Dustin Wolf. I'm sitting here from my perspective going, ooh, I think that would be best to maximize the potential of Dustin Wolf. That's not to say that that's the only way you can do it, but I would be curious to see, and will be curious to see how the goaltending situation kind of plays itself out between here and the start of the season.
A few texts at 960-960. Dan in the office says, New Jersey was the clear choice because he's got 2 years left and with retention can be had with little cap impact. In 2 years, one of their young goalies may be ready. Markey was a great goalie this year behind a leaky defense. Acquisition cost and cap hit are much better than Saros or Ullmark, who both need raises soon and would crush their cap structure. Doubt Nashville or Boston are willing to retain salary. No other fit out there for them without negatively impacting their roster further. That comes from Dan in the office, which is very fair. What else we got here at 960-960? This says, I'm excited for Dustin Wolf to show all the naysayers that short guys indeed can be good goaltenders. That's from Brett in Calgary. Paul in Chestermere says, cap space is a massive asset. Finishing bottom 10 this year, given the pick stipulation, is a smart move. Agreed. This says some bad grades the Flames got at last year's draft time trade. That worked out pretty good. Finally, Danny in YYC says every expert on 960 and online has said the Flames got fleeced and really questioned it. That's fine. I'm not concerned. That's why we have opinions. It's why we're allowed to have different opinions. I take into consideration all of the circumstances and think they did pretty well.
Over the course, prior to the Markstrom trade, over the course of the previous 11 seasons, I think there were only six goaltenders that were dealt for first-round picks or part of a deal that included a first-round pick. So it's not like this is the norm, more so than it is the exception. Now you can kind of go about, okay, well, who was and who wasn't moved in? Were they a bona fide number one? So on and so forth. But the fact remains that a starting goalie moving for a guaranteed number one pick isn't something that happens every year in the NHL.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. By the way, the guy who texted in about the Stützle confirmed he was making a joke. So that was actually
tip of the cap to you, sir.
Quite funny, my friend. As we start to wrap things up on this segment, we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on a Thursday. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Flames Talk on a Thursday. Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers along with you on this Thursday. And, geez, I wonder what we're talking about still. It's only been the one thing that Flames fans have been talking about for the last day and a bit. And that, of course, is the Jacob Markstrom trade. Jacob Markstrom now officially a member of the New Jersey Devils. Going to dive into that, and we're going to dive into the NHL draft because we're actually really excited to bring in our next guest. We say hello to Mike Morial from NHL.com. He's the co-host of the NHL Draft Class podcast as well. So we'll get into the NHL draft, and Mike's based in the New York area, so was all over the Jacob Markstrom trade on Wednesday as well. Mike, really appreciate this. How are we doing on this Thursday?
What's going on, Pat? Aaron, glad to join the program, boys. It's sunny here in Jersey. And, of course, I'm just churning out copy. We got, obviously, the draft coming up next week, so I'm all full speed ahead with that. But it was nice to get a little change, a little break in the action during the off day of the Stanley Cup playoffs, Pat, to get that big trade. So it was interesting.
Yeah, no doubt. And then a few other significant trades and player movement on Wednesday as well. But let's start with Jacob Markstrom and officially joining the New Jersey Devils. Kind of what was your reaction when you heard the news on Wednesday morning?
Yeah, so, you know, Devils were obviously working on this for a long time, right? Even when they were not able to do it last year, they still went out and changed their goaltenders because they kind of knew they needed some players at that position real badly. But from the Jersey side, you understand why, right? New Jersey's a good team. They had some injuries last year. They underachieved a little bit. The goaltending was not good. You know, they bring in a new coach, Sheldon Keefe. That was priority number one for Tom Fitzgerald, the GM of the Devils this year. And then priority number two, and I spoke to him about it at the NHL Combine, was getting a goaltender. Now, was he going to use that number 10 pick that they have in the first round for that? It was a possibility, but I think you're not going to trade the number 10 pick for a goalie flat out. I mean, it probably I would have thought that if he was going to do that, it probably would have been someone else, like maybe a defenseman, a forward, or a prospect, or something else involved with the number 10. But they get, you know, getting Markstrom is huge for them. They'll get a healthy Dougie Hamilton next year. Jack Hughes will be healthy. Luke Hughes and Simon Nemitz, big, mature, experienced defensemen. They should be back, and they'll be better. So the Devils are certainly you look at it, Pat, right? You got a tandem now of Jacob Markstrom and Jake Allen. It's not too bad. And with a healthy unit, I think the Devils will be back where they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, and that's kind of the one thing as we were here in Calgary leading up to the trade deadline, you know, the New Jersey Lynx made nothing but sense. You're like, geez, it's been a year where this Devils team, by all rights, should be fighting a whole lot closer near the top of the Eastern Conference or the Metro Division, and yet goaltending just wasn't helping them in that regard. You're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. They're close, and they get a legit goalie. They could probably sneak their way in. So now all of a sudden, as you would know, expectations would be pretty high in New Jersey going into next season, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even though, you know, everyone kind of knew and was kind of suspect of the goaltending going into the 23-24 season, you know, they still had a real good team. They struggled out of the gate. The goaltending wasn't good. And then you get the season-ending injury to Hamilton, your power play one, and you're depending on a rookie, Luke Hughes. Now, a good rookie, that, mind you, but you can't rely on Luke to be quarterback in a power play three quarters of the season. Another rookie comes in, Simon Nemitz. The goaltending, again, wasn't very good. You're getting more injuries, so it just faltered. It was one domino after the other. But healthy unit this year, they needed that goaltending. Tom Fitzgerald, since he took over his full-time GM in 20, has gone through 12 goaltenders that played at least one game. So he needed some consistency there. And I believe Devils fans will be satisfied. We all know, and you guys know, Jacob Markstrom's a true pro. He's proven it time and time again. Yeah, he's over 30, but he still has the pedigree there of a playoff caliber goaltender that can get it done in a big spot.
What'd you make of the price New Jersey paid? I know they give up the first round pick in 2025, which is always, you know, something that you don't like to part with, but didn't give up any important young roster players or top prospects. What'd you make of the price New Jersey ended up paying to bring in a guy as important as Jacob's going to be?
Yeah, I thought it was a good trade for the Devils, but I also think, Pat, you know, I think Calgary, you know, is in that rebuilding mode. So what were they going to do with Markstrom on a team that's rebuilding? So you got to get something in return. And look, Ball's not going to be a Norris Trophy winner. That's understood. But, you know, that's where your pro scouts come into play about, you know, what kind of D Ball is. What could he do in the future? And if you're Calgary, you're building after now giving up Markstrom, Zadorov, Tanev, Hanifin, four big pieces on the back end. You know, you're giving the reins to Dustin Wolf now. Vladar is your backup. So, and Wolf's earned it. So, you know, we'll see what he can do next year. But in Ball, look, he played 17 and a half minutes for the Devils last year. He played in all 82 games, which was great to see. He's going to clog up space in the defensive zone. He denied attempts against for the Devils this year. He struggled at times, but he's still young. He uses that size to negate momentum for the opposition. You know, kind of looks to tilt the ice in his team's favor whenever he can. Lindy Ruff gave him at times, the green light to push the pace a little bit in the offensive end. His usage this season, Pat, was limited to probably even strength and shorthanded situations for the Devils, and he did very well in that, you know, in that regard as a full-time player for the club. So I think, you know, all things considered, obviously the Devils are very happy with the return, but I think Calgary should be as well.
Last one on this trade, Mike, and it's funny, on our text line on Wednesday as we were breaking down the trade and starting to get some reaction from Flames fans, a couple of people put in, betcha Chris Tanev ends up in New Jersey. There's a long link between Tanev and Markstrom. They're really close. And whether it's Tanev or somebody else, Is New Jersey in the market for another defenseman in free agency? They've got with Dougie Hamilton healthy and Nemec and Hughes young, like they've got a really nice set there. But do you see them being in the market for one more defenseman?
I'm totally with you, Pat. I think And that was probably the reason why, while Fitzgerald was looking out there and trying to get the best offer he could for the best goalie he could, and obviously Markstrom was one of the big fishes out there and he got him, but he still has that number 10 pick in his back pocket. So it's a huge asset, and this is a really skilled, good draft. So if he's able to use that, maybe it'll cost him another player, a player that's in the lineup now or on the roster now, or maybe a prospect that's in Utica right now. But I do think that whether it be a top six, a power forward type of player, like another Timo Meier they can use, who was so effective in the playoffs 2 years ago. You know, you look at the playoffs, they need those type of players, the Devils. They have those skilled, really flashy stars on their club, but they need those a little bit of that pounding and that grinding type style of player, and it's particularly on the defensive side of things. So yeah, if you get a Tanev or someone along that link, I think Fitzgerald will certainly look into that for sure.
We are chatting with Mike Morial here of NHL.com on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. Mike is with NHL.com. He is the senior draft writer over at NHL.com and also the host of the NHL Draft Class, the NHL Draft Class podcast, which means we get a chance to dive in on the 2024 NHL Draft. The Flames with 2 picks in the first round, 8 picks in the top 4 rounds. So a lot of excitement, Mike, in this market about the upcoming draft. Aaron and I are heading to Vegas next week, looking forward to being down there for the draft and for draft week. How this is your bread and butter. This is what you work up to every single year. How what's the excitement level for draft 2024?
Oh man, it's I'm really excited. Myself, my colleague Adam Killman, we run the podcast NHL Draft Class, and we love going to the NHL Combine. Aaron knows this. And we really enjoy going to the NHL draft each year. We've been doing so since 2008. So it's been so much fun. We have a privilege. We're privileged to do it. And look, you know, let's face it, Pat, right? We're going to Vegas and we're going to the Sphere. It'll be the NHL is going to be the first sports league to make use of that $2.8 billion facility, that globe shaped arena. And it's renowned for that immersive video and the audio technology, the 16K resolution wraparound interior and the outdoor LED displays. It will be the first televised event live from the Sphere as well. So a lot to be excited about. I'm just, you know, I'm raring to go. I'm curious to see what it's going to be like inside as you know, players are being selected, you know, what they're going to put on these screens and how they're going to really rev it up for the fans.
Mike, Aaron here, and you mentioned that you've been pounding out a lot of draft copy. You've been doing this all season long, so I'm just curious, as we get closer and closer to finally getting into Vegas, as you mentioned, the Sphere, we are not too far away now, 8 days. In terms of storylines that'll unfold in that first round, what's piqued your interest?
I think right at the top, you know, the defensive side of this draft. I mean, 8 defensemen went in round 1 in the 23 draft, right, Aaron? And
yep.
And that number projects to hit double digits in 2024. It's really a dynamic class, and they're each unique in their own way, as you know. Leshinov, Saleyev, Bouillon, Perek, Dickinson, Yakemchuk, Solberg, Adam Yurechuk, Wilenius, Kiviharu. I mean, these are all great. I mean, and those are 10 defensemen, and all 10 of those guys legitimately could be picked in the top 20, top 25. And so I think defensively, this is going to be a real strong draft. We're going to see a lot of those players picked relatively early. I know the National Team Development Program has seen an average of 14 players selected off its roster over the past 5 years. I think that number might be down a bit this year, but there are still a couple, you know, first-round candidates. Obviously, Cole Eisenman, who I think has the best shot in this draft class. Left-handed forward Teddy Stiga is one to watch. Right-handed D, E.J. Emery has been coming up over the second half. And left-handed center Camille Bednarik is another player to watch. But the storyline that I'm most curious about, Aaron, is the Norway-born players here. I mean,
yeah,
we could legitimately have 2 Norway-born players taken in this draft before any Sweden-born player. And that's really, who would have thought that? But it is a strong possibility. And good on Norway. I mean, you got players here that, obviously have done well on an international scale. Sten Solberg, the defenseman there. Michael Brandstad Nygaard, who played in Sweden but is Norway born. Both of those guys obviously can be taken early in this draft. So that's another interesting point. I think it's going to be real intriguing to see where they go.
I hadn't put it into my thought bubble yet that you're right. We could see two Norwegian players go before the first Swede. So thanks for putting that one on my radar. The other one that I want to ask you about, which I'm very curious about, it's obviously a dominant story in Calgary since the season has ended and focus has switched to the draft. Tiija Ginla and the possibility of being selected by the Calgary Flames. Where does that rank among the feel good?
I've never heard of this before.
I don't know if you know this, Mike.
Well, that's a new one. That is a new one.
Yeah, we only talk about it at least once a week. Where would that rank in terms of just the feel good stories from the draft over the course of the last couple of years, just from the human interest side of things?
Oh, it would be fantastic. It's almost like a Cinderella story if that happened. Obviously, I don't know, man. It's like my first two mock drafts, I've had Tej going to the Flames, but
I've noticed
as we start getting closer to this draft and hearing the clamor, talking to scouts, talking to some GMs, I'm kind of getting the feeling that Tej is going to go a little bit earlier in this draft. So someone may ruin the storyline for us as we're getting set to pump out the copy on June 28th. But, obviously, Aaron, that would be a fantastic story. But, Tej just played so well this year. It's just a dynamic offensive talent. And I mentioned earlier that, I do feel Cole Eisenman has the best shot, but I think Tej Ginla probably is number two on that list as far as shooters in this draft class.
Mike, I won't ask you to guess or ballpark how many players you've talked to this season, draft eligibles, between the NHL Draft Class podcast and the features you're producing for NHL.com. But I'm always curious about this because I always have my favorites. And this might be a little bit of inside baseball here, but I'm curious, who are some of the prospects you enjoyed talking to the most this season?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, obviously, Macklin Celebrini off the top, just very humble. And those are the guys that most often you enjoy talking to, the guys that are humble, they have good backgrounds, whether they come up through major junior, the college ranks, there are stories behind how they got into hockey. And, even in the case of Sam Dickinson, the defenseman from London, who had a real interesting story and he could kind of laugh about it with us, was the fact that, when he first started playing hockey, he was a goaltender. Or he was actually cut from his team 3 years straight, and then in order to play on his youth team, he had to play goaltender, and he had to be a backup goalie. And he said he hated the position, and ultimately the coach said, "All right, you can try D," and that's where he took it from there. And he's been playing D ever since. So, kind of interesting stories like that always get us. But Cole Eisenman, speaking with Cole, and just how he had to go about, just kind of crafting his two-way game, Aaron. Everyone knows about the shot and how dynamic it is and how great it is. And just having him explain to us what he had to endure at the program and in video sessions and sit-downs with his coach, Nick Foer, over there, how it became emotional at times because they looked at, they see what people are writing, what people are saying. And sometimes it's kind of upsetting, but he was able to get through it. Coaches told him, this is what you need to do to become a better player. And lo and behold, that's what he's trying to do. And that's what he wants to become. So even stories like that, where it's, interesting in that regard, Michael Hage, from the United States Hockey League, another great forward, who's probably going to go maybe top 20, in this draft. Lost his father, last summer in a drowning accident, a horrible thing. But we, speaking to him at the combine and listening to what he had to say, how motivated he is to really do well this season for his dad. And he says he really wanted to push forward, make his dad proud. And he played a full season this year, had a great great, great season and is now a top 20, a potential top 20 pick in this draft. So good on Michael and what he was able to do. But just stories like that, Aaron, we see so many of them with so many players. And, you know, there used to be a time when a lot of these players had that deer in the headlights kind of look when they went and they spoke to GMs and scouts at the combine. But now they're so well-schooled and they don't give you the robotic answers either. They'll talk about themselves. They'll talk about their lives. And one other thing, I guess my favorite player, one of my favorite players to talk to this year is Harrison Brunick from Kamloops in the Dub. I'm sure you're very familiar with. Obviously born in South Africa. He left for Calgary when he was 2 years old. So Harrison had some interesting things to say about, I mean, obviously he didn't know much about when he was 2 years old, but his mom and his family told him a lot about it and how interesting it was in Johannesburg, South Africa. And he looks to become the first skater born in South Africa to play in the NHL one day. So that'd be great.
I don't know if you're reading off my page, Mike, but I just want to double back because I was going to mention and ask you the evolution of these kids and how much more polished and professional they are, even compared to 10 years ago. How do you even sort of compare from what we saw a decade ago to what we're seeing out of these kids now, both in their ability and willingness to kind of share their stories?
Yeah, I mean, the testing is so highly publicized, right, Aaron? And that gauntlet that they go through on the final day is one of the things that people remember and talk about. But for me, and I think for everyone else, the GM scouts, it's always been the interviews with the teams. The process of scouting a player during the course of a season, when you get to games, there's that removal of all you're doing is watching and evaluating how someone performs on the ice. And these are young men that are still developing as people as well as players. And the process of getting to meet someone face-to-face and have a chance to talk to them and ask them about what they want to do or what they want to be, I think is a big part of evaluating a player. You know, of course, Central Scouting doesn't have to worry about that. They're not drafting players or choosing them or adding them to a team, but the teams are. And you always have the GMs and you know, the reporters there, guys that didn't get to scout these players very much. They're finding out how they are as people and how they would fit into the culture of their team and will compete in the way the way they want them to compete. So, I think it's been great. You know, it's also funny, you know, you look back, Aaron, you know, in past years, it was a big deal over the fact that players such as Sam Bennett and Casey Mittelstadt couldn't complete a single chin-up. Remember that at the combine?
Oh, yeah.
But Bennett's, here is Bennett, right? He's already played 10 full NHL seasons. He's in the Stanley Cup final, second straight year. And Mittelstadt just finished his seventh NHL season, proving to be an effective middle six forward now with the Avalanche. So, real interesting stuff at the combine. It's always a lot of fun.
Feel like you're trying to make me feel old when you say Sam Bennett's been in the NHL for 10 years. Now, Mike, I want to know, how busy are you going to be next Friday? And do you recall a draft where teams have been so open about moving top 5, top 10, top 15 picks? Kevin Adams in Buffalo has discussed moving number 11. Bill Armstrong in Utah seems to be willing to part with number 6. You know, Tom Fitzgerald has made it known that 10 could be in play. Rick Dudley in Columbus mentioned that there is some chatter around number 4. How busy do you anticipate having to be just keeping up with all this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be busy. I think, and particularly those clubs with those multiple picks, right? And six teams have multiple picks this year. So I think we're going to see a lot of movement. That the teams with the multiples, San Jose, Chicago, Anaheim, Montreal, Ottawa, Philadelphia, each have multiple first-round picks. So look out for those teams to be on the mark. But then again, yeah, you're right. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres have come out and said, look, you know, Buffalo needs to make the playoffs. You know, they've got a decent team over there. So moves have to be made to bring in players that are going to kind of help them win now because they got the young core over there. They got talent. So, and that's, I guess you can almost say it was the same situation with the Devils. I mean, yeah, they had the number 10 pick, but you know, they've got Markstrom now, and that's what they needed. They needed some veteran guys in there at certain positions to really push a young team forward. And yeah, they're young, but these are also kids. It's really incredible to think that Nico Hischier is going into his 8th NHL season. Jack Hughes is going into his 5th NHL season. So yeah, these guys are still young, but they've also been in the league for some time, and they're at the point where they want to win as well because they know the talent that they have on these clubs. So I'm with you, Aaron. I expect there to be a lot of movement on, if not just the days before the draft, or next week, early next week, definitely on the floor.
Mike, really appreciate the time. Just before we let you go, what is draft week, and more specifically, what does draft weekend look like for you? Like, I've been to so many of these. It's my favorite thing to do. It's my favorite time of year to be down there and on the riser and on Radio Row and doing the show. So I know what I do. I know how things go from my standpoint. But you know, you're one of the senior guys at NHL.com. Your access is out of bounds good. I'm just curious what draft week and draft weekend specifically looks like for you.
Yeah, it's probably no different for me than it is for you guys, right? Just doing a lot of radio hits. We'll do some network stuff during the course of the week. Obviously, we'll schmooze with some of the scouts, you know, maybe some of the GMs if they're available. But it's also a time to, you know, this is it. This is like the big final event of the season, right, guys? So You also want to share it with your colleagues, the guys you worked with, and spend some time and kind of celebrate. We've gone through a whole season together, and it's fantastic, and it was another great year, and the Stanley Cup final is certainly turning out to be a great one. And, you know, the combine was fantastic, and we expect this draft to be a good one too. So a lot of things to celebrate as a team. And as a team, I mean, you know, .com, and I'm sure other outlets will be thinking the same thing. So you want to enjoy time with your colleagues in there. And then on top of that, Adam Kimmelman and I will be doing a couple episodes of NHL Draft Class. We'll have the first maybe two or three picks that are made. We'll chat with them for the pod. We'll talk about the first round in general when it's completed. So that's always a lot of fun. And then on day two, hey, it's good, right, guys? We're in Vegas, so it starts up a little earlier, so things will end a little earlier as well. So that's always a good thing. I don't know if that's good or bad, Aaron. You know, I don't know.
Did you hear me from Nashville? Is that why you're saying that?
Yeah, but it should be a lot of fun, guys. We're really looking forward to it.
Yep, us too. Well, we'll see you down there next week, Mike. Really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for the insight on this Thursday. That was awesome, hey?
Awesome stuff, Pat, Aaron. Appreciate it very much. Enjoy the rest of the Stanley Cup final and see you in Vegas.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Mike. That's Mike Morial from NHL.com and the Draft Class podcast joining us here this hour on Flames Talk. And Mike joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Celebrate the summer soccer spectacle from around the world and cheer on your favorite country on the big screens at Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast.